Okay, let's get underway. Tonight's January 19th, 2011 Planning Board meeting. We have a lot of things on the agenda tonight, including some very special guests from the Select Board who will be here around 5:30 or quarter of 6. The next item is a wind ordinance workshop, and we have the benefit of another very special guest tonight, Mr. Kelly. The agenda calls for a legal discussion with the town attorney about the wind ordinance issues that we've begun wading into. So, Bill, did you contemplate giving any kind of an overview, or just you're here to kind of answer any questions that you might have?
Right. I really don't have a sense of where you folks are, because I haven't been part of your considerations to this point. So I guess I'm here as sort of a resource. I have, for what it's worth, worked on a few different ordinances and different procedures in some different towns. And I've been asked by some other towns to review near finished drafts that they've had. So I'm somewhat the one-eyed man in the land of the blind, but I do have a couple anecdotal comments I can make in terms of my experiences for the last couple of years.
What towns have you worked with that have done this wind ordinance at this point?
A variety of stages of them, but certainly I looked at, there was one in Northport, Freedom, Jackson, Rumford, Belfast. I've seen the Dixmont, Montville, because they were all working at the same time as Jackson because of a proposed project through there. The state model ordinance. And I don't know if you folks have had advantage of seeing some of the guidelines from the State Planning Office that they have put out. If you haven't, that might be something you want to take a look at. It's sort of a guide to, if you want to adopt a wind power ordinance, here's what you should consider. There, get those off the website of the State Planning Office.
One legal question that's come up, and we're probably jumping around a little bit here, is that there was a concern that if local municipalities didn't enact some kind of wooden ordinance, then some kind of state action would be free to kind of come in and allow development based on, you know, some fast track process, but that if towns dealt with the issue and got it underway, that would be preempted. What do you know about that issue? Do you know what I'm talking about here?
I have not had to deal with the fast track legislation, and I think that's probably because my sense of it, just from reading the general press, is that's confined to the LURC areas, and does not address the incorporated municipalities. I can't stand on a Bible on that, but. We always have the same, the guiding principle that you have in your ordinance, district by district, which is if a use is not permitted, it's prohibited. So there are wind power, I don't believe there's anything that makes it special if it's prohibited. There are some more broad arguments that can be brought to bear, and perhaps here's where the trick is. There certainly is case law out there that says that if there's no place within a community where a particular industry or use is sought, then you have unlawfully prohibited town-wide that use, and you can't do that. There's got to be a place for every use in every town. There is some contradictory case law that says that's silly. A municipality can say that doesn't fit in our town, you can't have it. But take the affirmative act to say this is prohibited. And if you're going to do something like that, you want to build a pretty good record in terms of the purpose and explain why. So those two competing principles that if it's not allowed and everything else is prohibited, you can't do it. And wait a second, you've got to be allowed to do this someplace in the town. They do butt heads a bit. And that's one thing a wind ordinance can address, because now you'd have a particular set of criteria on how the review would take place for that type of use. You'd identify particular areas where it's permitted. I will say that I have not found any particular municipality that did not go hard left or hard right on these issues. The ordinance, for example, in Jackson, if you happen to have seen that, similar, I think, to both Dixmont and Montville. Essentially, from a practical perspective, not a legal perspective, prohibits development of wind power.
Is that the 13 times the size of the height of the...
About a mile, yeah. And that setback issue you're talking about.
Right.
And even more demanding, provides a five-year license. And that's it. And then a review process. So if you're a developer and you're putting in $3.5 or $4 million per turbine, cost-wise, and you have a 20-year schedule to make your money back, and you have a five-year licensing window within which, if you haven't been careful, you might fall down dramatically. You need to be careful. And I have talked to the industry folks who have been involved in small turbine projects, or at least trying to plan them, and they basically said there's no way anyone who's actually going to do development will now go to Jackson. Contrast that with Freedom, which you probably know has three turbines up there. Just as a 2-minute anecdotal story, because it's absolutely unique. When they came to town and said, we'd like to put these turbines up, the town said, well, hang on a minute, do you mind if we pass an ordinance? And the developer said, well, okay. And legally speaking, they didn't really have much choice, because a town can pass an ordinance even after the issuance of a permit to build if the construction has not substantially commenced. So the developer's always aware now in Maine that just because you have your permit doesn't mean that the sky is clear. If the town passes an ordinance, you're going to have to live by it. So they said, fine, go ahead and pass your ordinance. So they did. And then it went through the planning board review, and the planning board approved the permit. And then it was appealed to the Zoning Board of Appeals, and the Zoning Board of Appeals reversed the planning board. Well, the town figured that means we're going to have to go to court. That sounds expensive. Let's revoke the ordinance. So they did. So in a somewhat remarkable story in terms of planning, those three turbines were built upon a CEO's building permit that was a pre-printed form, and the only language on there that says three turbines. And that piece of paper is what was used to develop three turbines in Freedom. That's it. Other towns have looked at another anecdotal story of having small community wind projects, and they've gone through different gyrations. Camden's had a very, very initial review of that, as you know. Northport considered that a bit. And in Northport, a possible direction was hiring a consulting firm to merely shepherd the process of seeking grants along the way for a bit, to see if the town could take advantage of some very special grants that were out there that terminated right about now, I think, from the federal government. They were pilot programs for community wind. And the town would have had to pony up about $50,000 for these consultants to essentially look towards obtaining millions in possible grants. And the town declined to put that money up front because it chose not to. Very different path. Northport has, by the way, approved what's very close to the state model. That's the other side of the spectrum, which the industry would find fairly user-friendly. My other observation, since I'm talking generally, is I think the state, the Department of Environmental Protection, has learned a lot since projects started to be permitted in Maine in terms of what they don't know. I have on several occasions tried to get the state to help at the local board level when an ordinance is being drafted, to have somebody come from the state to give some expert advice about noise and the measurement and the readings of decibel levels, and how that will differentiate from the ambient noise and what additional noise is a turbine making. And what you find out as a layperson is noise is a pretty tricky thing. between the season, the foliage, the temperature, humidity, all kinds of things.
Topography.
Absolutely. Are you going down a ravine? Are you looking up a hill? Are you flat land or what? And I think the state has learned that it is much more complicated, and it's a tough thing to figure. I have tried and not been successful to have expert advice at the drafting stage in each town I've been involved with, because I think what I found otherwise is that the lay board is out there on the internet trying to figure out how to measure noise and what is and is not acceptable in terms of sleeping or a peace and quiet of enjoyment of your own property. These would be abutters on the principle that the town ordinance should protect general health, safety, and welfare. Well, what standard do we use when we're thinking about that in terms of noise and what's acceptable? And as I said repeatedly, this is an expert subject, very difficult for a board to make an informed decision, and somebody surfing the internet, you're taking random materials off the internet that may or may not be accurate. I think that's a weakness in the process of trying to figure out what is and is not acceptable from a general health, safety, and welfare perspective. One of the oddities I find in the state model is an opportunity for abutters to waive any noise issues that they might potentially complain about and sign an easement and say, we don't care how much this disturbs us or affects our health, we're signing an easement that says we're not going to ever challenge the noise issues on the ordinance. They call it a mitigation waiver or an easement. Frankly, I'm not sure I understand that from a planning perspective or from a legal perspective. I can't think of many other situations where private individuals can waive a legitimate health or safety concern through an ordinance. You can't sign up and say, I want to speed, so I'm going to go 90 miles an hour, and if I die, that's my problem, etc. A couple of points I've highlighted that I've had some curiosity about, some concern about. The other issue is flicker, that I'm sure you've heard about, and that is another area that I've sought to have some expert help on and never been able to find it at a local board level to understand those issues before you put criteria in place. And again, it's back to what do you find on the internet and how convincing does it sound?
Bill, has the law court here in Maine dealt with, reviewed a municipal wind ordinance at this point? Has there been any challenge that's gone all the way up?
Well, there certainly has been. There's been a couple up the friends of something lakes.
Lincoln Lakes.
Those have not been successful to date. I'm not aware of any one at the municipal level, and I think that's an indicative of the caution of the industry to try to develop a wind project now within a defined municipality. They definitely get the idea that the setback issues are important, and it's prohibitive, I think, from a business perspective, to try to develop it and go through the legal challenges for several years, put the project on hold, and have the uncertainty of it. They're not interested in doing that.
They'd rather pick a municipality without an ordinance, like Freedom.
But even so, it's a heck of a thing, because what will happen, I think, is there is a fairly active group of folks statewide who have looked at the issues, both in terms of the effects of blasting, the noise issues, the flicker issues, erosion issues, sensitive environmental area issues, and I think the industry is aware that if they try to go someplace where there's no ordinance, that municipality is going to be educated very quickly, and it doesn't take much to have a moratorium put in place. And they don't even start to think about building until they have gotten into a lengthy process where they're committed by contract to buy the turbines. And what had happened in Freedom, for example, was there was an overlap period where if the developer wanted to have its permitting in place and then would order the turbines, which would take 6 months to a year to be made. So you've got that process where just getting the stuff physically on site is going to take a while. There's an underlayment there of an issue of, I think it's 1 year in Camden. Once you get your permit, then you get your use permit, then you would see under the ordinance, let's assume you passed an ordinance, a developer went through the project and it was approved. They would then seek their building permit. Building permits tend to sunset after 1 year. There's a tricky part there where how does the local ordinance read? Does it say there has to be a substantial start of construction on the site in order for that permit to, for example, have a 1 year extension? So one of the things that the developers have been aware of, and again, a reason perhaps why there hasn't been development, is the delay in getting turbines ordered and delivered and the expiration of a building permit and worrying about what other ordinance amendments might take place when awareness rises. I think for the developers, in a simple sense, they don't want to be in a community where it's not clear that they're wanted, because there's too many hurdles that can be put in place legally and perhaps appropriately that they're not willing to put their money into that particular municipality unless they have a very clear signal that it's a positive place for them. I think it's very difficult. It would be unlikely to see another Freedom project in a small municipality.
Richard, do you want to say something?
Yeah, point of clarification. The municipalities that you worked with on their ordinances, is it my correct understanding that they never really had experts giving them advice as to noise, setback, flicker, so forth and so on? They sort of like picked something off the internet or read something and they picked a value to put in their ordinance? Or did they have an expert that came in and give them advice?
Not in any situation I was involved where we actually saw somebody in front of a board like this who answered questions. Some folks, I believe, in some municipalities sought out people. They may have been people philosophically favorable to their particular position. And then that information would be relayed. Well, so-and-so said such and such. And that sounds good. I know in one particular community, there was a comment of, well, how far is far enough in terms of the setback? And the expert opinion was something somewhat offhanded, like, whoa, how about a mile? And that became gospel. But not based in fact or any data about the particular site and the effects of wind power on that, from that particular site. I think the other shoe that is perhaps or could fall and has caused industry pause are nuisance suits. There's still out there, just because a project is permitted doesn't mean an abutter who feels they can no longer live in their house or feels the impact of the noise, and these are, I think the my understanding is it's the low frequency noise that is disturbing. There's a legal recourse there where somebody could challenge on a private basis and say, you have unreasonably disturbed my ability to enjoy my property because of the noise that you're sending across my boundary line and into my home. And that's a business decision that I don't think the industry has ever gotten around in terms of recognizing that if they're going to put a project up, they better buy out the neighborhood.
Along those lines, if somebody challenged the technical information in an ordinance, isn't it the responsibility of the town that's being challenged to justify those figures?
It typically is a town's perspective that it defends its board's decisions, which would be based on an ordinance that the town had adopted. So in that sense, if the planning board approved a permit and it was challenged and the ZBA also approved the permit, then typically I would be asked to defend that at the Superior Court level, which would in fact be defending the technical criteria. Sometimes the developer is left to be the lead defender of that decision, but frequently towns will ask the municipal attorney to go defend its decisions, its board's decisions. And I think that's probably reasonable.
In your opinion, wouldn't it be advantageous to the town to have experts provide the technical aspects of the ordinance?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm sure you've all read in the paper about the vinyl damming experience, and the same fellow who was working with the Energy Committee had very different views from the DEP in terms of what the testing meant after they did some more noise testing after the turbines were disturbing some of the closer neighbors. From a legal perspective, I don't know how you do an ordinance like this without having expert information. It's so technically driven. Who's qualified among us to measure noise and the effects on people?
Bill,
yeah.
In the state.
I saw Jan's hand before I saw you talking. Let me just jump in.
All right. The reason Chris asked you, one of the reasons he asked you his initial question about whether the state can override an ordinance in the town is because we were talking about our high elevation ordinance, which now would prohibit any kind of activity like wind turbine or electricity production. Mm-hmm. So in that case, would you still agree that the state would not override that ordinance to push through a wind turbine project?
I haven't researched the issue if there's any state statute that preempts a local ordinance regarding development above a certain height. So I can't answer that directly. I'm not aware of it. Mm-hmm. I think the challenge would be from a developer who said, you have unconstitutionally prohibited my business. You have no findings about why there cannot be a wind turbine project somewhere in the town of Camden. It's a perfectly legitimate business, and you're prohibiting it unconstitutionally. You've taken away my right to do my business. That's generalized. It's a very general statement, but that's the concept.
Mm-hmm. I fully understand what you're saying about if you go to the appeal level and somebody says, how did they develop these ordinances? And the response is, it was the best article we found on the internet. It's clearly a weak article, as opposed to three PhDs saying that these are the correct levels. When the state did the model ordinance, where did they come up with their standards, if you will?
Frankly, I haven't pushed the issue, but I have not gotten a satisfactory answer to that. Because I tried to get whoever asked it this way, whoever you relied on, would you bring that person? And let's talk to that noise expert, see what they have to say. And I never saw that person materialize.
I mean, we've asked Steve to try to find these people, because the state has a stated position of encouraging wind farms, wind power. So we'd like to know why they encourage it, and what they feel the correct levels are for flicker and noise and distance and what have you. But another thing I always wonder about a technology like this that's still kind of in its infancy is that there's bound to be technological change at some point. And can you write ordinances that would be able to almost automatically respond to the technological change, as opposed to every time somebody comes up with a newer and better turbine, it would require modification of the ordinance. I mean, if we're going to spend a lot of effort into preparing some kind of ordinance, it would be nice to know that it would stay put, you know, for 10 years or 15 years, you know, having to be adjusted to keep up with changes.
Well, I guess my first thought is that the noise is the noise is the noise, regardless of the technology. So once you've adopted the standard that you think is safe and is not unhealthful, then whatever the technology change doesn't matter. If you're thinking about it in the reverse of saying that if you have these types of blades, Series X, then that's okay. I don't know how that still gets around, how that would get around the idea of some kind of minimum standard of acceptability in terms of the noise level. So I'm not sure that the fundamental issues dealing with health, safety, and general welfare will change regardless of the technology. They may be more easily met by the developer, but I don't think the ordinance is likely to change once you have good information as to what is and isn't safe and helpful. It's possible, it seems to me, that what might be required is the funding of an expert for the planning board to review a site-specific situation and then have that information be part of what you review. Certainly in Jackson, for example, there's a 1.5% of the cost of the total project is to be escrowed for expert fees for the town board to review the project with its own expert. I think that still has to be bumped up against a standard of some sort that's objectively reasonable based on expert opinion. Because you're right, you know, if the ordinance is challenged and it's defeated because there was no rational basis for the board to adopt this technical standard, whatever it is they adopt, the effect of that is that's not going to be applied. And the developer may well skate free of any type of standard, which would not be the intent of an ordinance. So how you create the ordinance in terms of the standards, I think, is important. But and that's been my spiel every time I've addressed the planning board, that make sure the information coming into you for you to make your technical standards is sound. But I think that, you know, I'll go out on a little further of a limb and say, it may well be that the experts don't want to get into blanket statements because sound is so site-specific. And I don't know that they want to put a stamp of approval on a standard that may change depending on the site, in the sense of once you have a historical record of here's a turbine, here's what it produces. Well, it does, but it produces that noise in that site under those types of conditions. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I don't know why these folks are so hard to find.
Who are these folks?
I
mean, are these like sound engineers or?
Okay, hang on. We can't have just people blurting out because we're making a record.
Oh, sorry.
And there's no record. We should probably have you identify yourself just so the minutes.
Okay, I'm Gail Curtis, just a neighbor up there on the hill.
Okay,
just wondering who these people are.
Fair enough. Jane, do you want to?
Taking what you just said into consideration, I'm just wondering if this is after the fact that Bill should be having a microphone. Is Jeannie going to be taking minutes?
His voice carries rather well.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
We'll just take it back, Jan.
Is that mic live?
Yeah, this might be live off the middle.
Bill, I do have a couple of specific questions, and I think it would be helpful for you to look into these for us as the town attorney. One is the issue Jan raised, and that's whether or not our existing, I mean, we're looking at this from a town-wide perspective. The folks bring this concern to our attention and addressing us, our concern about sort of the Ragged Mountain region of Camden. And as Jan points out, there is an existing ordinance that prohibits development above a certain, above 500 feet, I think it is. And it does provide a lot of specific reasons for that, as I recall, like to preserve the scenic beauty, that it's a natural area.
Erosion.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff. And it would be helpful to know whether or not that would, in fact, preclude. I think, you know, my own view is that I don't know why that wouldn't preclude any kind of development. It doesn't, I mean, it doesn't allow wind power in that area, and I'd just like to know if there is any kind of overriding state legislation that would somehow authorize it, because I think the pressing nature of this would be less pressing if it's Ragged Mountain cannot be developed for wind power. The second thing is, when we were first addressed, we were told that the absence of a wind ordinance would allow wind power to be developed in Camden if we didn't have an ordinance, or at least hadn't gotten one underway. And maybe we could, Steve, pull out the minutes from probably 3 or 4 meetings ago when we were having that conversation, and look into that for us, because it was specifically, you know, the specific point was made that in the absence of either undertaking or having a wind ordinance, there was some state legislation which would allow anyone to come in and develop wind power sort of in the absence of guidelines. And
yeah.
So I really think we need to know the answer to that, because hiring experts and doing a lot of fact-finding could be extremely expensive. And, you know, if it's not, you know, if the issue is less pressing than we may think it is, we may not want to be incurring that kind of expense for the taxpayers. But that's, I'm not speaking for the board, I'm just sort of throwing out ideas. Does anyone else want to weigh in on the answer?
No, what our chairman was talking about was my understanding of our current ordinance, that the state could come in and override it and put up the turbines. And the friends from Ragged Mountain led me to believe that all we had to do was, with our current ordinance, is just to put in the term wind, and that would cover it. But what you've been telling us, that wouldn't do it. We'd have to have all kinds of specifics.
Well, I'm not sure where you'd put the word wind, but
in our current ordinance.
As it's being prohibited, you mean?
Mm-hmm. You mean high elevation?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't researched the issue, but I'd be happy to. I haven't been asked to, because I don't know why, but I haven't. But what you're talking about, if there is something, there's a corollary in the federal law for cellular towers. Most towns have a cellular tower ordinance now in terms of what's acceptable and what isn't. But there is an overriding federal statute that says that if a town's ordinance, quote, effectively prohibits, end quote, the development of cell towers, then that can be overridden, so to speak. But that's a federal law, and in Maine, if they have passed such a similar law, it's a preemption idea that at the state level they've said that here's an exception to home rule. You can't do your own local ordinance that would prohibit the following, because otherwise you effectively prohibit wind power development. I don't think that, I haven't heard anything that says that is on the books. That would be pretty dramatic, but I'd be happy to look at that. And I'll get back to you on those issues.
Does anyone else on the board want to Attorney Kelly's mind.
If an applicant were to go through the process of pre-approval, various people have the right to appeal. And typically, we talk about them having standing to appeal, and usually abutters or people that come to public hearings. Most of the stuff we deal with is, can only be seen from next door. I mean, we're looking at buildings or houses or whatever. It's not something that can be seen from the other side of town. Would essentially anybody who could see a turbine have standing to appeal it?
I am
to appeal the approval of a project?
I'm pretty leery of the standing issue at this stage in my career, because I've seen standing for land use development cases be expanded. One of the best examples is a Superior Court decision regarding Lincolnville. You all may be familiar with the Monroe property. The Monroe Field used to be called the Million Dollar Field across from Viking. And one person who got standing in that case up to the law court got standing because he previously served on the Comprehensive Planning Committee, because he drove by there often, because he was actively involved in the town, and that was the basis for standing. A very detailed decision drafted by Justice Helm, and with a great deal of support behind it. I had a similar case in Belfast that went up, and the gist of it is, went to the law court beyond the Superior Court, and there is a one perspective, and I don't know where the line is, but that instead of having to show that you participated and had a particularized injury, which has been the standard in Maine for those who want to challenge a land use permit that's been issued, were you there, and did you demonstrate that if this permit was going to be issued, you somehow will be injured, you yourself? Contrast that with, there's another body of thought about standing, that those best situated to bring the appeal should be able to bring it. No particular discussion about their particularized injury. And that discussion is along the lines that it's a jurisprudential decision. It's up to the judge. And there's no wrong answer. So if one is given standing because that's a good person to bring the case, or maybe the only person, then that person should be allowed to go forward. Frankly, I'm a little bit confused about where that line is now. Because since the case I'm describing in Belfast was adopted by the law court, other cases have come out of the law court using that more traditional standard of, were you there, did you participate, and have you demonstrated that you are particularly going to be injured in some way? So I tend to say that the door is pretty wide open on standing these days.
Before we go on, just planning out the rest of our evening, I know we have the select board, and I see a number of familiar faces out there. Deb, can I ask you, are all the select board members going to be here tonight, or are they?
I guess we'll be missing one.
Okay, so do you have everyone here tonight who's going to be here at this
Karen? Point?
Karen's coming, but she's going to be late. So
she doesn't get out of work till in the next. She doesn't get out of work until just about now.
Okay.
Don't wait for.
Don't wait for. I think we may be pretty much wrapping up just at this point. Anyone else want to jump in and ask Bill any questions while we have him here? And I did notice some hands in the audience. We're not going to open it up to public participation tonight. We often do, even though it's not a kind of advertised as a public participation. And part of the reason for that is we have a lot of other stuff on the agenda tonight. And the other reason is there are going to be, you know, plenty of other opportunities for folks to come forward and address us and provide ample, you know, we're going to give plenty of opportunity as we go through this, as we do on any ordinance change that we're considering creation. So no one's going to be left out of the discussion or not have an opportunity to address us. We're just not going to do that tonight. So, Bill, are you all set on these issues for now, or any other thoughts?
Sure. Just to put context, though, with what little I know, last year I was asked to go talk to 20 lawyers in Portland about wind turbine ordinances because they had no experiences with them. It is certainly a ripe issue in a small municipality and how best to do it. It's in its infancy. Once you get into the LURC territories, it's a different animal. But so I really am the one-eyed man in the land of the blind here.
Yeah. All right, why don't we wrap that up, unless anyone has any final comments, don't hear any, so we'll move on. And the next item on our agenda tonight is a workshop with the select board.